Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Ground ball, backhanded, Guillorme with a strong throw, game over. Astros win it 11-4. They have now improved their record in the month of June to a Major League best record of 12-5 in this month. And that's a 5.5 game lead, their largest of the season. Blummer back-to-back, huge offensive games.
I like the fact that the Astros are racking up hits and they're doing it as a team. They were relentless on the base pass today. They actually probably could have had some more runs considering they had 20 hits, but 6-for-12 with runners in scoring position. I'll take that.
6-for-12 with runners in scoring position. The bottom of the lineup, the last four spots in the lineup, spots 6 through 9, went 11-for-18 last night. A couple of bombs. We'll hear them here in just a second. Mauricio Dubon and Victor Caratini with home runs. Altuve hitting one as well. He was in his usual three-hole spot in the lineup. It's the A's, so I will take it with a grain of salt. But 13 runs two nights ago, Seth, 11 runs last night on 20 hits. Man, if this team, I don't expect that to be what they're doing every night, obviously, but if this team starts to hit at an above average major league level, that's a problem for the American League.
How many hits did they have the night before?
I don't know. They had five home runs. I know that. They had five home runs.
It's it's something that they weren't doing as recently as 3 days ago, the first game of this series. They couldn't produce versus a team like the A's. And we've just had, since yet again this year, just like it was last year, the beginning of the season was so miserable in so many ways that you forget just like how out of character and out of type they were. And you're wondering and waiting, all right, when are they going to start to look like these guys should look on paper? And they've started to look a lot more like they're supposed to look on paper. Paredes, obviously. Christian Walker, yes. He had two errors on one play last night. That's got me. That's got him on my list right now. Yeah. But at the very least, he's not a complete mess like he was early in the season. Cam Smith was the huge unknown. And just what are you going to get out of Cam Smith? And over the last 2 months, he's been an above average baseball player as a guy who's still in his first year of professional baseball. So like not just the majors, first year of professional baseball.
Yep.
So that part. And Yiner as well. Yiner was so miserable at the beginning of the year, and he still has these hiccups to where you don't just quite trust him necessarily. But he's been, at the very least, he's been an average player at the plate. He hasn't reached that kind of ceiling that we saw a couple years ago that you feel like there's something untapped there. But I it was more of a statement of faith a month or so ago where I said, like, at some point the offense is going to look different. Some point they're going to start scoring runs. I feel more solid about it now.
My bigger question is, can the bottom of the lineup keep this up? I don't expect them to go 11-for-18 every night, but I think that they've been respectable for a pretty extended period of time now in terms of coming up with big hits and being at least I don't feel anymore like I have in previous years where there's one or two spots in the lineup where you feel like it's an automatic out. I don't feel that way about this group that they've, by and large, been trotting out there most nights. Mauricio Dubon has started to at least, be a professional hitter. Now, he's hit home runs in each of the last two games. In fact, here's what the home run last night sounded like.
They are still missing Yordan Alvarez.
Dubon hits it high in the air, deep to left field. Schumann all the way back. He's done it again! Mauricio Dubon has been on base 6 times in a row and has a home run in back-to-back games in his hometown.
This is the building that Dubon has built.
Yeah, indeed. He's high school, minor leagues, major leagues. Yeah, yeah.
He's played in that ballpark at every level of the sport, or at least since high school.
Yeah.
And Mauricio Diaw, what did you say he did with Yordan yesterday?
Well, nothing. At the beginning of that clip, Julia said, "Ben, play the very beginning again."
They are still missing Yordan Alvarez.
She said they are still missing Yordan, and I said that was just kind of funny because she says that, and then 1 second later, Dubon, the comedic arch nemesis to Yordan, hits a home run. Like, hey, we don't miss him that much, buddy, all right?
No, I thought, man, it was a long time ago, but at 6 a.m., I thought you had said something like there was an extra story to that yesterday.
Nope.
But no, those two are always going at it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah,
In a fun way.
Yep, for sure. Jose Altuve hit a home run. Well, let's take a listen to that.
Jose hits one high, hits one deep, hits one out of Sacramento Stadium as the Astros take a 5-1 lead, a three-run jack for Jose Altuve hitting his second here at Sutter Health Park.
They keep going. He keeps hitting.
Yeah.
I'll give the folks of Sacramento a break in that they don't necessarily understand the hazards of heckling Altuve.
Mm-hmm.
But can you just play the first 3 seconds of that, Ben?
Jose hit.
I think that might have been an expletive. I think that might have been a bleep Altuve. Altuve. Yeah.
Poor Ben.
What?
Ben's like,
oh, no. You couldn't hear it. But it was the you get, no, yeah, no, Ben, I wasn't
Ben's like, hey, why wouldn't you tell me that?
Yeah. No, because I know that he couldn't hear the actual swear word.
Oh, okay.
But it was kind of the rhythm of what he was saying. It sounded like
it had
a bleep Altuve. Yeah.
It had that cadence.
Yeah, don't worry, Ben. I mean, hey, Ben, replay that potential FCC violation one more time.
I think that's what Ben was reacting
to. Yeah, no, Ben. I wasn't trying to get you in trouble.
Diming you out, yeah. One more home run last night, Victor Caratini.
I think Mark Kotze, manager for the Athletics, is trying to find somebody to get him out of there, but Caratini's pouring drinks.
Victor Caratini connects on a three-run bomb down the left field line. Caratini adds to the Astros' huge inning. It's now 9-1, 7-run scoring with 2 outs and nobody on.
Okay.
Dry and smooth, always goes out nicely.
Martini, Caratini.
Yeah.
Yep.
I got you.
We did the circle of trust. We're going to recap it here in just a second. Did we overlook Victor Caratini, circle of trust? Got an OPS in the kind of mid-low 700s. Been one of their only trustworthy left-handed, switch hitter, left-handed bats.
Yeah. I don't. It's hard when guys are giving average performances.
Yep.
It's above expectations for him.
Yeah.
But the circle of trust knows no. It doesn't revolve in a world of like where we're taking their scouting reports. And that's why Cam Smith's not in it.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, Cam Smith's been performing well, but he is still a rookie and he's been above average, but just not enough that we really feel rock solid about it yet.
Do I trust you in this situation right here? That's the criteria. So there you go. Okay. So I'm just making
sure. It's been very nice. Don't get me wrong. It's been really, really nice having him on the team.
Yeah. No,
like in the last 28 days, he's hitting .258 with a .635 OPS. You know, it's not
deserve it. Yeah, that's fair. We just didn't bring his name up earlier. That's why I was just
little
spot evaluation here on Victor Caratini. I agree with you on that. All right, so for those who missed it, Seth and I did the latest.
Real quick, Sean.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, Caratini. I can remember the discussion was he was a little bit like a Jake Meyer situation. He had a really good May, and we were saying, all right, well, if he keeps this up, then in June, then we'll probably put him in the circle of trust.
And he hasn't.
He fell off enough that, I can't trust him yet.
I get it. Yep, I agree. All right, so we did the circle of trust earlier. If you missed it, we did it in the 7 o'clock hour. Everybody who was in it when we did it a few weeks ago, only five in it from a few weeks ago, all still in it, all still performing at a high level. Isak Paredes, Jeremy Pena, and then on the pitching staff, Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, and then Josh Hader and the rest of the bullpen, all in the circle of trust, all with an argument to be on the all-star team, too, I think, in the American League. I think if you can get five guys in, it might be those five guys. And then we added Jose Altuve back in because he's had an OPS of over 1,000 since we left him out a few weeks ago.
Yeah, he responded.
He responded.
We asked him, we wanted to see if he would respond, and he did.
Yep.
A little young whippersnapper might have something to him. He's got sand.
Yep, indeed. And after much debate convincing by Seth, brought great evidence into the court that is the Circle of Trust committee. We decided to put in Jake Myers, and we celebrated after putting in Jake Myers. We did. That's, he's in.
Don't let us down, Jake.
Yeah.
All right? Don't make us look like idiots.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Just like a good father tells his little leaguer before he goes up to the plate. Yeah. Just don't embarrass me, you exactly. bum. That's good parenting right there.
And I'm still not all the way there with Jake. I'm willing to put him in, but boy, he's got a short leash with me right now, Seth, for this circle mm-hmm. of trust. Mm-hmm. Short leash.
I know. When next we convene, it could get hairy.
Next we convene.
The good news from the Astros is just what's going on with some of the injured pitchers.
Yeah.
Christian Javier is going to face live batters.
Okay.
So that's very, very good news. Luis Garcia, not as great a feeling about it. He hasn't advanced past throwing bullpen sessions, but according to Espada, he's very close to facing hitters. And then J.P. France, who everybody loves to try to forget about mm-hmm. after his shoulder surgery, mm-hmm. he has faced batters now, throwing his second live batting practice session last week.
That'd be great, man. That would be great. That gets really interesting. If these guys that they've been putting at the back of the rotation, like Colton Gordon and Brandon Walter, who's been awesome, and then Ryan Gusto has kind of bounced back and forth from bullpen to rotation, these guys are healthy. They all deserve to be on the staff, I think. If they're healthy, how do they get incorporated back in, you know?
Yeah, and I think with those three pitchers that I just mentioned, J.P. France, I put him in that same bucket of Colton Gordon and everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, there's still huge unknowns there, and how good do you really feel about him? We'll see when he comes back. Luis Garcia and Christian Javier, it's more, okay, can they come back healthy and can we get the best version of them?
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a huge boon.
Javier's easily the one that has me most excited of the names that you mentioned, in no small part because he's the only one who hasn't had any setbacks yet. You know, Garcia's had setbacks. France has been, the shoulder's been an issue for France. Javier had Tommy John surgery. He's rehabbing. He's making normal progress here. You know, throwing off of the ground, throwing off of a mound, facing live batters. I'm letting myself, in the face of all the reasons not to, well, because the Astros seemingly don't know how to bring guys back from injury, it would feel like. I am letting myself.
What are you talking about?
I am letting
Lance
my, you know what
break.
I'm talking about. I'm letting myself.
It was a freak weight room accident with Lance. What are you talking about?
He ain't the only one. I'm letting myself get excited about Javier.
I didn't, the first time we mentioned that injury report of the pitchers, I completely forgot about Lance McCullers.
Yeah.
That's how quickly you go right back into, I'm not going to think about Lance McCullers. If he comes back, then great, but I can't rely on it. Anybody else, if it was a freak weight room injury, I might say like, oh, okay, these things happen. I can't do that with Lance.
And it's so weird for Lance, you know, whatever news is going to trickle out over the next few days, it's not an arm injury. So there's not this pattern where you go, well, he's playing catch. He's soft tossing off the ground. He's throwing mm-hmm. 90 feet without being on the mound. Now he's on the mound. Now he's facing live hitters. I don't know what the progression is for a foot. Like, I don't, you know, I like, he's got to keep the arm doing stuff, but what does he do? I'm guessing Rick reports of him playing catch because we love the reports of him
pushing
playing
off
catch.
The rubber is the big one.
That's
the
big one.
The way they described the injury, it sounded to me like turf toe. It was above the right big toe. And
that ain't good, man.
When it comes to pushing off the rubber, that big toe is in your actual Achilles heel. For a lot of sports, is your big toe.
Yes.
Because it seems like it should be nothing, other than your Achilles heel being your actual Achilles heel, obviously. But, the big toe is an underrated Achilles heel.
ESPN
on the Seth Payne anatomical chart.
Up next, Seth power ranks the toes.
Seth power ranks the Achilles heels of the body that aren't the actual Achilles heels.
That are the non-Achilles heels, that's right. Mm-hmm. It's like the non-quarterbacks on an NFL
roster. The oblique in baseball, I feel like that's an Achilles heel.
That's a big one. Where do you think the Astros are on the ESPN power rankings that just dropped, Seth? MLB
Sixth.
Power rankings. They're eighth.
Oh, you bastard.
Disrespect. Disrespect. Here's what they say about the Astros on ESPN. The blows keep on coming for the Astros, but they keep on winning. The latest setback was Lance McCullers landing on the injured list when he sprained his right foot working out over the weekend. He's the fourth Astros starter to go to the IL this season, including Yordan Alvarez, who remains out with a fractured hand. Okay, so that's awkward wording. Fourth Astros starter. I'm hearing pitchers. They're talking about starting lineup, I guess, because they're including Yordan Alvarez. The Astros continue to charge forward, nonetheless, winning 7 of 8 games, 11 of their last 15, to take a commanding lead. 5.5 games this morning, I'll add that, in the AL West. Hunter Brown, Josh Hader, Jeremy Pena have starred for a franchise that just won't stop winning. Then why are they eighth? Why are they?
I'll tell you what. The World Series odds right now have the Astros as the seventh most likely to win the World Series.
That's about eighth. That's about right. Yeah. Like seventh.
Yeah.
And
no, it's 100%. It would be really hard to justify. You know, but, the Yankees. It makes sense why they're second for World Series odds. And yeah, you know, the Yankees are known to plummet and fall, and they have a very, very, very generationally good baseball player who is awful in the playoffs.
Let me guess. Yeah. First is the Dodgers.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So pretty healthy margin.
Yeah, I mean, those are public teams, too, as far as the odds. Like, the Yankees are fifth on these power rankings. The Astros have a better record than the Yankees as we awoke this morning.
This is where the same thing that could lead to the Houston Astros winning a World Series is the same thing that led to the Great Recession, which is sometimes the computer models just don't, they can't take into account these weird scenarios, you know? So the same thing that led us to the glory of the Great Recession and the housing collapse and me having to sell my Florida rental condo at 50% of cost is the same thing that's going to lead. This is where I get my comeuppance. Yeah. Or no, wait. The computers get their comeuppance.
Indeed.
And I get my vengeance by the Astros winning the World Series, despite all logic telling you this roster cannot win a World Series.
Right.
What the hell?
Right.
How are they winning?
How are they doing?
How are they as good as they are right now?
How are they doing it, man? Big credit to Joe Espada. No doubt about that. Will Anderson Jr. is the man. We love Will Anderson Jr. Revisiting the trade. Does Will Anderson Jr. have converts now from the day he got drafted where everybody said, this is a dumb trade by the Texans? Has he converted some of the harshest critics? And audio from a Will Anderson Jr. opponent this past year that will get you very excited about the Texans' edge rusher. That is coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Love Will Anderson Jr. here in town. He's my favorite Houston Texan. I am unabashedly open about that. I think Will Anderson's great. I think his personality is great, and he's becoming a great player right in front of our very eyes. The trade that got him here back in 2023 was a big source of conversation around the league. The feeling was the Texans may have overpaid to move up and draft a non-quarterback at 3, moving up from 12 to 3 and giving up a second-round pick, high second-round pick, in that draft, and then their first-round pick in the next year's draft. Steve Palazzolo, formerly a Pro Football Focus, does a podcast with Sam Monson. They both worked together at PFF back in the day. Laid out the draft night view of the Will Anderson Jr. trade on a podcast this week.
The problem is 3 for the price of 1, essentially. What would you have gotten at 12, at 34, and then next year's first-rounder? And at the time, next year's first-rounder, we're like, man, the Texans aren't even that good. That might be a top 10. That's Marvin Harrison Jr. So we're trying to concoct these scenarios. We knew Marvin Harrison Jr. was coming out a year from now. And we said, wait, you might give up 12 and 34 and Marvin Harrison next year or whoever else you get in the top 5. So the Texans kind of bet on themselves. And yeah, that pick became like 26 or 27 the next year. Good job there.
He's understating, I think, Steve, there just how high people thought that pick was going to be that the Cardinals got from the Texans. They do mock drafts like the very next day after the draft is over, Seth, for the next year's draft. You couldn't find one that was being done for the 2024 draft the following year that didn't have the Cardinals pick from the Texans being 1 or 2. Couldn't find. Everybody thought the Texans were going to be trash again the next year.
And I can remember the thing that was driving me nuts, not even as a Texans fan, but just as a person that actually pays attention, was how many people who should have known better, saying like authoritatively and saying everybody knows the Texans are going to be the worst team in the league next year.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like it was a mathematical truth or something. That was their source. They cited everybody. Everybody knows the Texans are going to have the number one pick. And I'm like, go through every single year. It's hard to pinpoint who the worst team in the league is going to be.
Yep.
And like, it's really, it's as hard to do as it is to pick the Super Bowl champion in some ways. So that just offended me just on how raw, if you pay any attention at all, it's usually not that cut and dry. But then beyond that, right, that was still the big part that you could monitor. And it was fun for us that next season because you slowly started to see the Texans draft pick go below the Cardinals pick.
Yeah.
Because remember, that was the whole thing. Oh, they gave up their own pick and that, oh, it's so stupid.
They had the two picks they had was Cleveland's pick and the Texans pick.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, well, they better have given up that Cleveland pick. Cleveland's going to be a playoff team. You know, Deshaun Watson, you know. And you're absolutely right. It was so fun watching that Texans pick continue to sail into the mid to high 20s on all the boards. You're absolutely right. Steve Palazzolo's a convert, though. He said the Texans won the deal.
Here's the way I would look at it. I always say three players is better than one. I think it would actually be tough. Now, if you went with the actual players that were picked at 12 and 34, it's two Lions, Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, and then next year it was Darius Robinson with the Cardinals. You can make an argument that Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta added up are more valuable, better than Will Anderson. You can make that argument. And that's my argument normally when with the unknowns. With the unknowns, it's normally give me the three mystery boxes over the one certain thing, which is Will Anderson. However, you would be hard-pressed to find three combinations of players, three players that would actually equal the value of Will Anderson using my own homespun value metrics. It would be very difficult to find the exact right players that the Texans would have taken at 12, at 34, and then the next first rounder next year that would add up to be as good as Will Anderson, you know, at least in the ballpark. So right now, as critical as I was at the time, I'm saying this looks like a win for the Texans.
Okay, this is a fun exercise. And look, the Texans probably weren't going to take Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta with those two picks. The way the Lions wound up with both of those picks in the Paris Johnson trade that the Cardinals ended up moving up from 12 to 6. The players that were on the board at 12, if the Texans had just stayed at 12, Seth, and there was no Willie Anderson Jr. trade, these are the top, I'll call it five players that were on the board. These are the five players that got picked from 12 through 16. Jahmyr Gibbs, Lucas Van Ness, the defensive end out of Iowa, Broderick Jones, offensive tackle, Georgia, Will McDonald IV got picked by the Jets, defensive end out of Iowa State. That might have been the guy. They love Iowa State kids. Emmanuel Forbes and Christian Gonzalez, two corners, go 16 and 17. Do you have any feel for like if the Texans are taking Will Anderson as an edge rusher, maybe it's those two defensive. I'm trying to figure out who they would take that if I knew in an alternate universe they could have had Will Anderson,
no,
I would feel good about.
none of those make me feel that much different.
Yeah.
And including the, you know, Sam, I think Sam brings up the players that the Lions drafted, and that's a good haul of players right there.
Yeah.
And Jahmyr Gibbs, for one, I don't know if Jahmyr Gibbs would still have the ability to walk right now if he had come into that Texan situation behind that offensive line.
Yep.
I guess you could say the same thing about C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
He was struggling to walk off the field in the Chiefs game.
He was.
If you go the other direction too, and even say if the Texans had the guys that were taken between the third overall pick and the 12th pick where Jahmyr Gibbs went, like the only guy that really jumps out is Jalen Carter.
Yeah.
And I still don't like, that's not the value between 12 and 3 in that draft. I think Will Anderson is head and shoulders above everybody except arguably Jalen Carter, but Jalen Carter on the character side of things or the leadership side of things is drastically different than Will Anderson. Because it was the reason they traded up for Will Anderson, it wasn't just the playoff, it wasn't just the film evaluation, it was the whole package. It was his leadership, it was his personality, everything else.
I would add to that, I agree with you, I would add to that that look at next year's draft after that, there wasn't a defensive player taken until the 15th overall pick. I think they were looking at that too, like, okay, we're trading these picks and next year's first rounder. This guy, we think, is better than anything coming out, not just in this draft, but the next draft. We're not going to have a shot at getting anybody that can have the impact Will Anderson Jr. is going to have coming off the edge in the next two drafts. So I think that factored in as well. Texter points out, and we'll play Will Anderson audio here in a second. What's funny, you know, Palazzolo's talking about how they got that Texans pick. that first round pick in 2024. It's going to be a top five pick. They might end up with Marvin Harrison Jr. from that pick. The irony, a texter points out, they wound up with Marvin Harrison Jr. with their own pick because they sucked so bad. The Cardinals said. That's fun.
The pass rusher that went at that was available right there that would go next was Lucas Van Ness to the Packers.
Yeah.
He went 13th or 14th. That was a guy that I was really having a hard time seeing why people were so excited about him.
Yeah.
The difference between Lucas Van Ness and Will Anderson is vast. Especially against the run. Lucas Van Ness, everybody kept saying like, ooh, look at how good he is against the run. And I'm like, you're just saying that because he's a white guy. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that's not, no, he's not.
Yep.
And what I've seen of him in the NFL is that jibes. He's not much against the run.
Let's get to Will Anderson Jr. and some audio from an opponent of Will Anderson Jr., actually a former teammate at Alabama. It's going to get you excited. First, here's Will Anderson Jr. This is from a couple of weeks ago at OTAs on his growth since being drafted by the Texans.
Like I said, my coach, he's done a phenomenal job, Coach Rod. He's done great of just putting together a whole presentation for us of all the sacks that we missed, the missed opportunities that we could have did, hitting the ball the wrong way, hitting the elbow the wrong way, reaching too high and getting a penalty, stuff like that. So, like, we left a lot of sacks out on the table, and that's what I'm talking about, going back to being precise. Like, how good can you be at the process of attacking the throwing arm? How good can you be at taking the ball away, getting a strip sack, picking it up, taking it to the crib? So, like, those are the things that we want to start putting into our bag and finesse moves and stuff like that, taking our game to the next level, especially for me.
He's just the best.
It's cool because he always had a really good get off, and that was apparent in his rookie year, but he had to refine everything after he crossed the line of scrimmage. And last year, the focus was at the top of the rush. When you get up, you know, to the level of the quarterback, what are you doing to get separation and get to the quarterback? And he made vast improvements in that last year. And now it's almost like you're working your way through the whole process. Okay, now when you get to the quarterback, how are you poking the ball out?
Yep.
How are you finishing the play?
Yeah.
And I would expect to see, just like he did last year, I would expect to see a lot of improvement in that regard.
Okay, so that's Will laying out how he's grown as a player. This is J.C. Latham, former teammate of Will Anderson, first-round pick of the Titans, high pick for the Titans last year playing tackle, and he's on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, and they're asking him about going against Will Anderson. J.C. Latham thought he was getting Alabama Will Anderson when they went against each other last year. He learned he was getting year two NFL Will Anderson.
Probably the only guy who can practice just like the game, like unconsciously. So like going against him, I was like, okay, I know I can block this guy the game. Like I've blocked him well enough in practice. And I get to the NFL and everybody's making it like a really big deal. Like, hey, you're going against Will. Do you think you can block him? I'm like, absolutely. Like he can show you the tape. I have the tape. I have the money from him. You know what I mean? we get to the game and that's when I was like, yeah, this motherfucker. He's gotten so much better. Like he always had a Katie for like going one with the ball, like coming off with the ball. And he wasn't as good as he is now compared to college because like he would get flat for it, you know. But in the league, like he's mastered that so much. He uses his hand at the top of the rush so much better. He has a lot more counters that he does now than he did in college. He's not just trying to bully the lineman. Like he's learning how to get around them. He's learning how to pursue, use the right angles, the five line and all that. So yeah, that's what I was like, yeah, this motherfucker.
It's different.
Yeah.
Who got the better of who last year?
Oh, he definitely got the better of me, for sure. I'm not finna sugarcoat it or whatever.
I got to look up after that. I got to go watch that first Houston game from this year after the show, because I'm just looking at – I just want to look at the PFF grades of each, which a grain of salt with PFF grades, but this is notable. J.C. Latham averaged pass blocking. He averaged 67.8 as a pass rushing grade on the season. By far, his worst performance was that first Houston game with a 29.2.
That was the game where they sacked Will Levis eight times and still found a way to lose the game. That matches the eye test when it comes to pass protection in that game, for sure.
You know what? And I'm going to look forward to that because yesterday I went back and I watched some of the Texans' offense versus the Titans.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was so angry, Sean. Yeah. I was so angry.
That was the game where the linebackers were just chilling in the middle of the field waiting for the cutback.
Just chasing things back door that they shouldn't. The linebackers turned into J.J. Watt.
Yeah, they broke every rule.
Because they didn't, because they knew. They knew that there was nothing. They knew that the running back was not going to be able to get to the edge. So they just started shooting every gap. And it was so bad. It was so bad. Oh, my God, Sean, it was so bad. The plays in which it's not just the offensive line, everybody. I know people want to be the tight ends, the wide receivers. Mixon wasn't making the right decisions because he didn't know what he was going to see. Yeah. It was so ugly. Oh, it was atrocious. It was so bad.
The Latham cut that we just played feels like watching a friend play a video game where they're playing Madden on like the high school level. And then somebody flips the switch to like the all Madden level, and they're like, "Whoa, this is way different."
You know what? It's kind of like in high school too, when some kid goes through his growth spurt over the summer, and he comes back, and all of a sudden the kids who are already full grown men, and they're like the badasses their freshman year. All of a sudden, they're like, "What? Hey, I was supposed to do that to you.
Yeah,
you're a nerd." Yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Final segment coming up. We'll find out what the guys on In the Loop got going on. Question of the day. There was a massive transaction in the NBA yesterday when it comes to a team sale. The Lakers went for a value. They sold a chunk of the team that basically values the team at $10 billion. Which Houston team, if any, is most likely to sell in a seller's environment like this, the professional sports team here in town? We'll talk about that. And we'll talk to the guys on In the Loop coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. We'll talk to the guys on In the Loop. Luke Morrow in for Reggie Atitula today. John Lopez is here. So we'll talk to those guys in about 5 or 10 minutes, see what they've got going on. We've not touched on this story very much today, but I think it's interesting because it's kind of out of nowhere. Like, this is a blue blood franchise getting sold yesterday. This was out of left field. No, we're not in L.A. Maybe this was a big talking point in L.A. the last several months or years. But the Los Angeles Lakers are entering into an agreement, the Buss family that's owned the team, entering into an agreement to sell majority ownership of the Lakers to Mark Walter in a transaction that values the franchise overall at $10 billion, sources told ESPN on Wednesday, the highest ever for a U.S. professional sports franchise. The Buss family is going to keep a minority share of the team, so they'll still have they'll still be part of this thing, just over 15%. The big thing, I guess, when it comes to the Buss family is Jeannie Buss, who has operated as the main owner of the Lakers the last several years, or governor, as they say, in the NBA. She will continue to run the team for, quote, at least a number of years, sources with knowledge of the deal told Ramona Shelburne of ESPN. It was guaranteed as part of the agreement that Buss would remain in charge for the foreseeable future. Walter fully endorsed that plan. Of course, Walter is the CEO and chairman of diversified holding company TWG Global. He's been a shareholder of the Lakers for a few years now. He purchased Phil Anschutz's share of 26% a few years ago. But Walter and his company have interest in multiple sports organizations, including the Dodgers, the Sparks, and Chelsea of the Premier League, even a professional women's hockey league team as well.
The thing about NBA teams, and this is where especially they've allowed – they're more flexible in how they allow their ownership structures to come in. So you can see hedge fund type guys do it. And the building is huge. Yeah. So the revenue that you can generate from an NBA arena is for one, your maintenance costs and everything aren't nearly what they are with, say, an NFL stadium. But it's a perfect size for concerts, for trade shows, for hockey teams. Like, all of those things, they generate so much revenue. You can imagine in L.A., especially, when it comes to things like that, there's just – they make so much money. And because you might wonder, okay, how can they sell more than some of these NFL teams with all the revenue they generate? It's a combination of the team and owning the facility or controlling the facility. And that's something the Texans right now, the NFL teams can do it too, but the Texans don't even own the or control the facility.
Here's what's crazy about that with respect to this deal.
Is the real estate
for the Lakers, the Lakers do not own. Anschutz Entertainment Group owns and runs Crypto.com, which used to be Staples Center.
Yeah.
It's a great point because that's what the Fertittas have with the Toyota Center. That's what's crazy about it is the Lakers, because I heard that also. I just Googled it to make sure. I heard it this morning on a national show that that's what's crazy about this $10 billion is they don't even have all the stuff you're talking about the arena. Wow. It's a valid point. They don't have it, though. That's what's crazy.
If they did, it would be even more than $10
correct.
Billion.
Yeah, man. Correct. Yeah. So, the Lakers are one of the primary tenants along with the Clippers until they built their own arena. You know, they built the big Intuit
Dome. And they don't have control over, they can't get revenue from any other events they put in there?
That was my understanding on the show I listened to this morning, is that they don't have that type, and they may have been wrong.
Because they could be the tenant, but still have all those other things, but it sounds like no.
So
the NFL deals and some of the NBA deals are just going to be mind-blowing in the future.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big jump. I think the second biggest deal was the one that was just done for the Commanders a year or two ago for a little over $6 billion. This is $10 billion.
This is related, Sean. I'm not going off on a tangent, but because it's obviously related to the Texans' headquarters and potentially a new stadium and everything. The other day, I was just talking on a live stream about the Star up there in Dallas where they have their headquarters. And they have a practice facility right there with bleachers. They have a common area, and they do watch parties there. Yeah. So one of this Texans fan was stuck up in Dallas and ended up going to a watch party with the people he was with up there. He said it was incredible.
Yeah.
He said it was a really, really cool experience.
Yeah.
And that part, because I was trying to figure out how much would fans really care about whether the Texans headquarters is at NRG or elsewhere. I think the fan experience, and especially during away games or at the draft or during training camp, you could be going, you could be relieving yourself in a permanent bathroom instead of a porta potty.
Yes.
I'll take a sales tax increase for that.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Can you just keep me out of there's nothing like going into a porta potty at 11 a.m. in August in Texas.
Oh,
yeah.
It's been there for 3 weeks or whatever.
Air conditioned bathrooms.
Oh, you kidding me? That's a great point.
He said the watch party was really an incredible experience.
I'll bet.
And then when you're going to training camp too, I don't know how the Cowboys do it because they go away for training camp. The Texans presumably would have it right there.
Yeah.
And having permanent facilities, it can be a much more comfortable environment than what they do now.
It feels like teams in every American sport should be super psyched about the NBA team should obviously be very excited. This is where they're setting the new bar. And I don't think if you were to sell the Sacramento Kings, I don't think they're commanding $10 billion. I don't think it's like quarterback contracts in the NFL where the next team's going to get 10.1. The Lakers are a unique case based on the market and their history and tradition. And in the short term, them having Luka and LeBron on the team, I think that all factors in. But this is good news, I think, for NFL teams. Like, I think all of a sudden by seeing that a basketball team's going for $10 billion, that the next NFL team to sell is, to me, I don't know. I feel like at least splits the difference between $6 billion and $10 billion.
I've long been known to. I decided long ago that I'm not going to buy an NFL team, Sean. Mm-hmm. I've just said I've been firm and resolute in that. Yeah. Like, no, I will not be buying.
I remember how hard that decision was for you, though.
I don't want all the headaches that come along with it. Right. I don't want public scrutiny. I enjoy being, largely pretty well liked by the people of Houston.
Yes.
And I don't want to ever put myself in a position where I'm largely despised by the people of Houston. So I decided, no, I will not buy the Texans if it ever comes for sale.
Right.
This is changing things a little bit for me. I might could consider it, perhaps.
Oh,
yeah? I might.
Buying the Texans?
Although, am I buying high if sports teams are at an all-time high valuation? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's going to factor into my decision.
Yeah. You cobbling together the $8 billion, I could see that happening. It's just the decision to actually go ahead and pull the trigger on it.
I feel like buying the Texans, I feel like the McNairs might have like a reverse draft day scenario where somewhere there's a piece of paper that says anybody but Seth.
anybody but Seth, no matter what. Yes. Seth is the anti Vontae Mack. Do you
Bears keep their distance from old Seth?
My feeling. It's funny you bring that up because I think that's kind of what we tease into the segment. Do you think this affects the thinking of any of the, I'll just say the big three teams here in Houston, just seeing this Lakers thing?
Well, for one, I think with Tillman, his sons are, they love being
involved. This is a family thing, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like, they're not like Woody Johnson's kids, some jackasses that are just being annoying around the facility. They are, you know, part of running the organization, and I think... I just don't think Tillman
They're not
would
just
ever.
Running around the locker room showing negative tweets to all the players.
40-year-old Patrick, or however old he is. Yeah. I apologize, Patrick, if you're not 40. Yeah. You know, running around the locker room getting autographs and stuff. No, yeah. it's not that. So I doubt I don't think the Fertittas will sell anytime soon. Nope. I don't think they would. I mean, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I think a lot of people had said, yeah, it's a matter of, or they were clamoring for the McNairs to sell, whatever it might be. That's changed pretty drastically.
I agree. I don't think I'll be alive to see somebody other than the McNairs own the Houston Texans. You know, they certainly are a money-making entity, and the goal of any business is to make money. But I think the genesis of that team, where Bob McNair said, I just felt like Houston had to have a football team.
It's one of the things that's keeping me from, you know, aside from my resolute declaration of not buying a local sports team.
Right.
They probably won't be one of the Texans probably won't be available for a long time.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think the Astros similarly, too. I don't think so either. But
I guess the Astros, the only one that would be interested in there is because it was kind of a committee affair from the get-go.
Jim Crane does not own nearly as much as people think of the Astros.
Yeah, but yeah. Jim Crane is a dyed-in-the-wool baseball guy.
Yep.
You know, like that's the part where I could never see Jim Crane doing it, but who knows if Jim Crane were to, you know, in the future, sometime far, far off in the future, when he passes away or whatever, if maybe the fact that there are so many owners, maybe that would make things like more likely for them. But I don't know time soon.
Yeah, I don't think we see breaking news anytime soon of a Houston sports team, you know, getting sold. John Lopez, Luke Morrow is in for Reggie Atatula today, rocking his Hartford Whalers. I see that Hartford Whalers T-shirt, and I think of like, oh yeah, I was there when the Whalers got sold to Peter Carmanos, evil, satanic, awful person who then moved them to Carolina.
Yeah, we had season tickets.
So did I.
And they had that goal, like if you get a certain amount of fans come to the games this year, we'll keep, you know, just to show that support.
We'll keep the team in Hartford.
And Whaler fans showed up and hit that plateau, and they left anyway.
Liar.
Yeah.
Liar.
Liar Peter Carmanos, awful
you
human
know what's
being.
Funny? Yeah. You call them satanic, except I wonder if some part of your subconscious remembers. They moved in 1997, which was right when there was still a lot of the widespread irrational fear of satanic cults in America. My high school almost banned us from wearing black because they were so worried about the Satanists amongst us.
Weren't
which
you?
I knew for a fact were a couple kids I knew that were trolling the adults.
Yeah.
And put it went out. That was big back in the 90s, kids. This is what we did before social media. We would try to scare the adults by going out and putting like pagan type stuff out. I wouldn't, but right. I know some people would. Yeah.
Good thing social media came along and calmed everything down.
Yeah, everything's cool and rational.
Settled
now.
Settled everything down.
Now it's just our world leaders doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Carmano, still alive, age 82.
Oh, that dog.
Well, Satanism pays off sometimes.
Yes, sir.
No, yeah. Just he made a deal with the devil.
It may. John, you've been here forever. Do you
forever.
Think there's any chance that any of the three teams in Houston look at that dollar amount that the Lakers went for yesterday and said,
Yeah, I was listening to your discussion, and I was kind of looking at Luke. Because at 11:20, there are some eerie similarities between the Buss family and the Lakers and the Texans.
Oh, okay.
Not that it's going to happen. Not that we're even predicting that, but there are some very eerie similarities.
Okay, are you going to get people
worked up
over this?
Did one of them date Phil Jackson?
Possibly. I didn't dig that deep. I didn't dig that deep.
Dale went through a weird time in college, you know? It's just,
Currently married to a washed-up comedian?
Right. Yeah, today. Oh, that's right.
Jay Moore.
That's right, Jay Moore.
Yeah. He's the biggest winner in all of this.
No kidding.
Jay Moore.
Bob Sugar is part of the lake. Yeah.
Jay Moore catching strays because he's so fat. Oh, so of course the bullet's going to hit him.
I rode in a limo with Jay Moore after the Kansas City Jim Rome tour stop.
Really?
And we were in a limo driving around town. We had a good old time, man. He did a comedy
Jay Moore,
show.
he's living the life. I'm telling you, when you look at him, you're like, that's Jay Moore?
Yeah.
He's like, he does not care. Go watch, he is taken care of, man.
Go watch Jerry Maguire. He does not look like that anymore. Yeah, that's wild. All right. By the way,
so 1120.
Hold on. Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. Yes, mm-hmm. 1120.
We're going to talk about, the bus sale and some eerie similarities.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question of the day
we have. And I feel a little bad about this one. It has, for a couple of reasons. It has to do with Charles Davelin, the outfielder for Arkansas.
Yeah, there was a big collapse in that game last night, right?
Three big things happened that just, you got to be sick if you're a Hogs fan. Yeah. Sorry, Clint. But he just dropped a ball in left field and allowed two runs to score.
Wow.
And our question is, it's a little unfair. The other reason I feel bad to Seth, because, you know, his athletic career, it lasted, 25 years or whatever it was. But what sports moment, not as a fan, but what sports moment in your own career still haunts you? Because that's going to haunt that kid forever.
Okay.
I was a long snapper, and I sailed the ball over the punter's head that ended up losing us a game.
At a crucial time.
Yeah. We had a lead and everything. It was the worst possible. We were punting the ball to be safe, and I sailed it over high school. Then I almost got in a fight with one of the opposing team's parents on the way out. That was the only. That was the good part of that night. The cops had to restrain this guy.
that's kind of in the same neighborhood as one of mine.
Newark, bunch of bums.
Restrain that guy. I want to hear yours, but mine, one of them that is still haunting. I was a football and basketball guy my whole life, but I did play a little baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a freshman, they ended up putting me on varsity, and I always wanted to catch. I was a first baseman. They always wanted me to catch, and I was a backup because I was a freshman.
Yep.
So the catcher got sick or hurt or something, and I was starting a game at catcher against, our big rival.
Yeah.
First at bat, before I even put on my catching gear, first at bat, I hit what could have been a triple, but it should have been a double.
Yeah.
And I'm rounding second, and the third baseman catches the ball, and I go fists up right into his face to try to knock the ball out of him. And they throw me out of the game.
Oh, you got ejected, huh?
I never caught a single game, actually.
Oh, wow.
I never got. They threw me out in the first inning.
Oh, did you draw blood?
I don't remember, but I was really just trying. It was innocent enough in my mind, but I was just trying to knock because he had his glove up.
Ejected, huh?
Ejected.
Okay.
That was perfect for a catcher. You were ready for those collisions at home.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think it's fair to say that in this room, Luke, I don't know what your athletic prowess was back in the day.
He looks athletic.
Yeah. More athletic than me. I know I wasn't as good an athlete as you were, John, and I certainly know I wasn't as good an athlete as my co-host who played in the NFL for 10 years. So I have many moments that were bad moments on the field. But the worst one was probably in Babe Ruth baseball, which I think Babe Ruth is like 8th grade, right?
Something like that.
Yeah, Babe Ruth, tie game, 9th inning. Ground ball, I'm playing second base.
Yeah.
Ground ball, second base, right through the wickets. Oh, Bill Buckner style. Bill Buckner style, winning run score. Because I still hear about it from my buddies to this day. That's the biggest thing. Like they still.
Do they have a nickname for you?
No. Old wickets. No. They probably behind my back they may have. Yeah. Probably. It's all those guys on that group text I was talking about yesterday.
I knew he didn't have the makings of a varsity athlete.
They would have been accurate. I didn't even have the makings of a junior varsity athlete. Yeah. They would have been very accurate.
What happened? Did you not get down low enough? Did you come up too early?
Just glove in the wrong place, man. Yeah. I can't blame it on the turf.
Yeah,
I can't blame it.
Bad hop, took
my eye off the ball. Maybe I mean there were obviously runners on base. Yeah. So if I remember, maybe it was something where I'm pulling my glove up to start to flip it to the shortstop.
Yeah,
But yeah, that's still it haunts me to this day, man.
It should.
Luke, what you got? What you got?
I'll save my worst one for later. But real quick, another Babe Ruth story. Yeah. For me, when I played baseball, I was a decent pitcher. I was a pretty good fielder, but I couldn't hit. I drew a lot of walks, but I couldn't actually put the ball in play. I had a good eye. I was. Sabermetrics before sabermetrics, just getting on base. And my coaches hated it, and they'd always, got to swing the bat. Anyways, long story short, we were down one. Well, I think there were 7-inning games. So it was bottom of the six, down one, first and second, two outs. I was the number 9 hitter. And I was coming up, and it was the player's idea, but the coach agreed. They wanted me to get out intentionally. so that we'd have the top of the order leading off the bottom of the last inning down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They didn't want me to draw a walk.
Yeah.
Even though, come on, loaded bases, two outs are your best hitter. That seems like not a bad idea. But, but that was such a blow to the ego when your coach tells you to intentionally get out. Are you kidding?
Make an out.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh.
I just want to make sure Bobby gets to the plate, okay?
With two men on.
Tell you to just stand there or something?
Don't need you.
They don't want me to get a walk.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I told my father in the car ride home, and he was just like,
that's a killer.
That's not right.
Your dad goes, you know, he was right.
That's a rough moment as a parent. Yeah, I don't know what you say in that
situation. Okay, one last one. It's not really a game thing, but in sixth grade, we had, you know, majors, and then Babe Ruth was junior high. Sixth grade, my last year in majors in Little League, was on the Angels. We have the same team every year until you get to sixth grade, then you move on. Yeah. So my last year with the team, I wanted to get on the field any way I could. Our catcher from the previous year had moved up to Babe Ruth.
Okay.
So I'm like, all right, I'm going to give it a go at catcher. And they encouraged me to.
Yeah.
So the first couple practices, I mean, I sucked at catcher, but I had two amazing practices. I was like a cat behind the plate, blocking pitches. And we had a pitcher that threw off-speed stuff sixth grade. Yeah, go figure. He made it like eighth grade before he threw his arm out. But I had two of the greatest practices that any catcher in Little League has ever had. And so I was the catcher to start the season. I was done by game three. They were like, oh, my God, where was the kid who was
What were these? We thinking?
I was back in right field, man. Picking daisies in right field. So, yeah, man. Thanks for bringing this back up, John. I love reliving
we all have those haunting
sports
memories.
Sports history. My whole youth sports history.
I could have been a great catcher.
Haunting memory. I was for 2 days.
That was always the worst because I umpired Little League baseball like in high school and college.
Yeah.
And whenever they try to stick a new kid behind the plate as the catcher, and every time either you're dodging the pitch or he's just running to the backstop to go get the pitch, it's like this is slowing down the game so much.
Slowing down and putting you in danger.
Yeah.
Catch the
ball.
Home plate umpire.
Sean, we'll have to. I have another story. I'll tell it at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay.
It involves Tony Banks when I was playing against Tony Banks. The most embarrassing thing I've ever done as a football player.
Oh, really?
We'll do that at 6 a.m.
Oh, okay.
I'll be up.
Okay. We'll do it at 6 a.m. and we'll relive it at 9:55 tomorrow. In fairness to the In the Loop crowd. All right, Seth, antibodies to you. I'll see you Friday.
Antibodies and get some work in. You know, throw some BP or something. You can do it, man. You can do it.
Yeah. I'm making my comeback at age 56. Yeah. All right, we're done. We're out of time. KALT AM, KALT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey sports station. That's what you're listening to.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.